Movie Buff Specialist Phil and John are back as we continue going through our Marvel Cinematic Universe watch slash rewatch. And this was a new one for me, Avengers Infinity War from 2018. And we're going to be talking dream scenario. I was totally under the impression that the snap happened in Endgame. So that was fun when all of a sudden it started to click in my head that the snap was going to happen in this episode or this movie. I know, you know, obviously without even seeing this movie, the snap was iconic and was like all anybody was talking about in the summer of 2018. So I should have known it was Infinity War, but for some reason I just assumed the snap would be Endgame. So here we are. Welcome to me watching the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, where I think that massive moments are in totally different movies than where they actually are. So hello, hi, welcome. Hope you're going to enjoy this. Be talking dream scenario, going to be talking Avengers Infinity War. Dream scenario is going to be first. So if you're in Infinity War, like I always say, coming around a half hour, but man, what do you think about Infinity War on your second viewing here? I know we're going to talk about that one second, but I just want to see what your thoughts are.
I still enjoy it. It's so hard. I think this is the hardest movie so far to properly judge where it sits, not within just like as an enjoyment level in like MCU rankings and like everything about it. It's so hard to fully judge.
Yeah. It's a weird one. Because I'll be totally honest. I hated it. And then the snap thing I thought was amazing. I really did. I thought the ending was fantastic. So we'll talk about it when we get there, but I hated everything that came before it. But you know, that's your tease. If you're dying to hear me crap on Infinity War, here it comes. But no, I mean like, I'll talk about the merit, but I'll talk about, I think I have really good reasons for why I don't actually like this movie. So we'll talk about it when we get there, but we're going to start with Dream Scenario, which is a Nicolas Cage weird movie. When the trailer released, it had all the makings of a Charlie Kaufman movie. And then I watched it and it was essentially a Charlie Kaufman movie. If Charlie Kaufman forgot to make you laugh. Christopher Borgli makes this one. It is a pitch black comedy. I don't know if I'd actually classify it as a comedy. I thought it was so depressing. Really shocked me how depressing it was. What'd you think about Dream Scenario?
This was, speaking of movies that are like really hard to like pinpoint how I feel about them, this movie has a lot of the makings of something that I really, really love that I feel didn't quite get there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. I thought it was very strong, very strong. Some moments were amazing, but I do feel like there were parts of the story that felt that they were taking a back seat to like the quirkiness of this movie. But then I don't feel like the quirkiness ever got quirky enough. I thought it was going to be a little bit more being John Malkovich than it was. I mean, it really never got to that point. I still gave it 3 stars. I enjoyed it. I thought Nicolas Cage was absolutely phenomenal. In the role, you feel so bad for him. He is so pathetic the entire movie. But yeah, it didn't make me laugh the way I thought it was going to make me laugh. It starts off that way, and it gets dark fast, and it just stays dark. I mean, it's nightmare scenario. It really is. I mean, this guy's life sucks for 90% of this movie.
Yeah, it's there's just like no upside. And it like it keeps going down. It goes downhill the entire time until you get to the very end. And then it's like, man, this is actually like I am leaving this completely depressed. I don't know how I feel about anything. There are points in this film where I was like questioning whether we were in reality or not, which is kind of cool. But at the same time, I was like, man, I hope this is a dream just so that it isn't the truth of what's happening here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. There were parts that I thought the same thing but I do feel, and I don't want to spoil this one too much on our conversation here. So I will preface with that because I feel like it's an interesting concept that we should try to talk about loosey goosey so that people do go check it out, because I don't feel like this is going to be one of the more popular movies that we've done on this podcast. So I'll try to be a little bit more sparse with my spoilers. But I do feel that this movie was telling you it was ending on a positive note. It might not have felt like a positive note, but I do feel like at the end of the movie we saw Nicolas Cage's character gain control for the first time in the entire movie. And that is not a spoiler. You're going to watch this movie and you might have a totally different feel when you get to the end of this movie. But that's how I felt with the ending. It felt like his whole life was so out of control. He wanted something more. You know, it's all the beauty that goes with fame, fortune, and everything, right? And then it all starts to spiral. There's nothing you can do about it. And at the end, even though it's definitely a dark ending, it felt like he had found his avenue for creating a positive.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like, I do enjoy the journey of this character here. It just, I think my concerns with this, and like you said, like, Nicolas Cage is spectacular in this film. Mm-hmm. His performance is so good. You know, he's just like embodying this character completely, which is like something we've come to expect out of Nicolas Cage, in all honesty, right? Like, he doesn't phone it in many of his performances. And some of his performances are a little kookier, but they're always like really solid. And this character, it's the concept of this character that I think falls short for me, where it's like the spectacular nobody becoming big, becoming famous, and like all of the pros and the cons that come with that. It's just not explored enough, I don't think.
I think the problem that I had with it was, I don't feel that he deserved as bad as it got. I don't feel like, so I think the message of this movie at the end of the day was, you know, the whole be happy with what you have, ambition can be dangerous, you know, all of those things, mm-hmm. right? Because essentially what the premise of this movie, for anybody who has no idea what we're talking about, but might be interested in going to see it, the premise of this movie is Nicolas Cage is a professor at a university who wants to write a book. He's a, you know, an environmental biologist or something like that. It, you know, it's a totally like nerdy thing. And he wants to get a book published and he can't get this book published. And the whole beginning of the movie, people are just looking at him funny. And it turns out that he is just appearing in people's dreams. And it starts off where that is really good for him, right? All of a sudden his class is becoming more popular. He's getting meetings. Things are starting to look up for him. But then what happens is in the movie, as he starts to feel like, okay, I can become somebody, his character in the people's dreams starts to become a nightmare. And the people start to take it out on him. And so things start to go south for him. And it really frustrated me because I don't feel like Nicolas Cage's character deserved all of the negativity that was coming around for him. And while, like I said, I felt that the ending was positive, I don't necessarily think that the ending gave us enough hope for a character that really was trying to do the best he could. I felt like he just had gone his whole life feeling like nothing. And now he finally feels like he can become something. And, you know, he goes through this whole thing and he just gets destroyed. I mean, it's really like a pretty vicious look at cancel culture as well, but still, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. It's just, I couldn't quite determine what the film's stance on things like cancel culture were. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell if it was pro-cancel culture. I couldn't tell if it was anti-cancel culture. And it didn't feel like it was presenting it in a way where myself as the audience got to assess and determine what side of that argument I fell on.
Yeah, they threw out a couple things, right? Because it starts off where, you know, he's trying to do all the stuff at the university, and that the one part there, oh, you can do a sponsorship with Sprite and this and that. And he doesn't want to do that. And then as he starts getting canceled, it's, oh, well, you know, the Jordan Peterson types are willing to talk to you. So they start throwing out some of those ideas, but they don't really take a stance one way or the other of like, this is bad, this is good. This, you know, it just kind of says it. And I think that's where this movie falls short for me. That's why it's a 3-star movie, not a 4-star movie. Because it doesn't take you to that next level. Like when you watch a Charlie Kaufman movie, it takes you to that next level. Because essentially, Cage is playing a more extreme version of the Charlie Kaufman character from adaptation. It's you know, really pathetic, really sad, nothing going for him, super awkward. You know, that's the character he's playing in this. And while it works a lot, the character is different from, I feel like, the movie that's going on around it. The movie that's going on around it, it needed to have bigger ideas. The Dreamfluencer thing was fantastic. That is the type of big idea that I'm talking about. But that wasn't in the movie for nearly long enough.
No, it felt like it was something that came, like it felt like a button. I actually thought the movie was going to end when that happened.
So did I.
Like, oh, okay. This is the joke that we're making here at the end. But like when the movie kept going after that, I was like, this is weird now.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you either end on that idea or you present it earlier in the movie to show the impact of what's happening. But again, like the movie didn't really decide whether it wanted to focus on Nicolas Cage's character or the event that was occurring.
Mm-hmm. And I do think the other thing I couldn't figure out was whether it wanted to be a drama or a comedy.
Yes.
Tonally, it moves around a lot. And I mean, even when the first nightmare with Nicolas Cage happens, I was laughing so hard when he comes into his daughter's room, stomping with his arms out like that. It's perfect. But it then gets so dark in the real world. You want it to become more of like, how is he going to redeem himself? And it seems like the end of the movie, it seems like if they had another 15 minutes of the movie, that's where it was going. It felt like it was going towards he's now going to, you know, because the whole point is at the beginning, man, he's in these dreams. He's not doing anything. He's a passerby. He's an observer. Yeah. And it's like, but I wish I was doing something. And then when he finally does start to do stuff in the dreams, it's very negative. And so I feel like towards the end of the movie with the Dreamfluencer stuff and the Norio and everything like that, he starts to feel like, okay, I can control how I am being perceived in other people's dreams. I feel like we needed that 15 minutes though. We needed that 15 minutes of him redeeming himself because everything fell apart and it wasn't him. It wasn't, and it was a frustrating watch at points. Somebody, one of the top letterbox comments was, I didn't know that they could make The Hunt into a comedy. And it really was as comedic as it feels like you could make a movie like The Hunt.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. I didn't even think about that comparison, but
yeah,
this movie, I know we're not like really talking spoilers here. Or we're going to try to avoid spoilers as much. So this might be as spoilery as we get here. But I feel like this conversation we need to have. The decision not to reveal why this is happening felt weird to me. And normally I'm totally okay without revealing something like that. But because we didn't explore the event enough, it felt like it needed an explanation as to why it was this guy, because it felt like there were things in the plot and in the script that were connecting him to it, but nothing ever concrete. And it was never in a way where it's like, and it never directly correlated to his life outside, like his real life either. Right. Like it was always like, we can kind of see the correlation here, but there was never any direct correlation.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I get not wanting to get into the whole conspiracy theory side of things or have it become something like that or whatever. But again, that's where I think that third act needed to be longer, because it's, you know, it's the whole idea of I can't control how you're perceiving me. Like when he, the scene of him walking in the room and all the college kids running out of the room and being, you did this to us. It's frustrating, and it could be funny if the movie ends on a comedic note, but it doesn't really end on a comedic note. So When that happens, you feel bad for this guy because it's like, well, what did he do? And I feel like the whole point of this movie, in my opinion, is here's what happens when you get to that midlife crisis phase and your whole life you've been out of control of what's happening in your life.
Yeah.
You know, he's talking to his publisher or to Sheila at the beginning saying, why couldn't you help me get published? How come you're taking my ideas? You're taking my stuff and you're going to go ahead and you're going to do this. That's BS. And again, though, he's not somebody who's going out of his way to try to make it happen for himself. He is just going out there and hoping that somebody else is going to help him. And so now he's in the dreams, and finally he starts to feel like, okay, I'm becoming a somebody, but still he's depending on others. He wants to get his book published, but he's going out to Michael Cera, and who is great in this movie. And you know, he's doing all of those little things, but he's not taking total control. So it feels like, especially at the end with the Norio band, how he's going through this process of learning how to use that. It feels like the message of this movie is gaining control of your life, right? Gaining control of how you're perceived, being the one who's in control of your story. But the third act isn't there to give us that. And that's the redemption we needed.
Yeah. It kind of just feels like it's three quarters of a movie. It's mm-hmm. what it comes down to, I guess. Like these themes, they're such interesting themes in the movie that just don't get delved into enough. It's like everything you've just been talking about that idea of like control and taking control and perception and how we're perceived by the public and everything like that and how it affects us and how we adjust to it. Mm-hmm. Because the problem with this character is he never makes any adjustments to his life. He's kind of a stale character.
Well, the one adjustment he makes is the fart come fart scene. That's really it.
Yes.
Where he finally says, you know what? Like, what if I did cheat on my wife? What if I did go do something like that? And so he does that. But then what you start to see from him towards the end of this movie, I feel, is he gets more frustrated, right? He just gets more frustrated with everybody. So that's kind of his character changing, because we see him get frustrated with Sheila, but it's very sarcastic. And then when he talks to the other girl who's saying she's had him in the dreams, oh, you know, that's so weird. Are you really insulted by me? No, I'm not insulted. He's starting to be okay with telling people, yes, you are insulting me. No, I do not like the way you're talking about me, or blah, 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 yada, 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 right down the line, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, I just want more. It's what it comes down to. Like, that is my entire experience with this movie, is I just wanted more. Because I feel like Nick Cage does absolutely everything he can with this script. I just don't feel like it goes deep enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dream movie, right? We Inception told us to go deeper into dreams. I think we need to go deeper into this dream.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is a nice look at, you know, all these people, especially nowadays, everybody wants their 5 minutes of fame. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. because anybody can be famous in the most minute way, right? I mean, anything can go viral. What was it like to go viral? Wow. You know, he's got that smile. Everything's exciting. But really, the culture we live in is, okay, that was cool for 5 minutes, and now I'm over it. I don't care anymore. And so, like, it seems like he's going through that in this movie, where he's a nobody. He gets his 5 minutes, and then he's a nobody again. But he's like fighting against becoming a nobody because he likes being in the limelight. Yeah. But this movie is showing really the horrors that a lot of people, once they do climb to a certain level of fame, start to go through in today's society. Because so many people who do eventually climb to that level end up having something in their past. I mean, everybody has something in their past, right? Everybody has something that they're ashamed of or don't want out there. Even if it's not criminal, it's just something that you don't want to be public knowledge. Everybody has that. And it feels like in today's day and age, once somebody gets to a certain level of fame, it's okay, what tabloid can find a way to bring this person down? And it's a sick society that we live in, that's my opinion. But it feels like that's what he's going through, and that's what the message of the movie is. But it's doing a little surface level of that messaging for me.
Yeah. I just thought it could have delved deeper, and it could have been like, if it took the comedic route and it went further into like, okay, now he's an influencer and stuff like that. Right. Like, it's weird that we don't go that far, because it almost feels displaced from our world at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does feel like it's taking place in a future, but it's not. It never is stated that it's taking place in the future. It does have that feeling of like Her, where it's just far enough in the future that they could do something weird like this and whatever. But, you know, it also feels like it's taking a couple shots at the film industry at the end of the movie when it starts talking about how he is the person who is synonymous with this industry.
Yeah.
But, you know, not everybody's as bad as he was. You know, we're positive. We're good. You know, it's delving into that, and the way people talked about this back during the Me Too movement and all of that in like 2018, 19, 20, where a lot of it was, well, what do we do with the Weinsteins? You know, what do we do with other big names like that who were a part of these horrid things, but they were so integral in shaping the culture. And that seems like what it's, again, asking the question, not providing an answer, which I don't always need an answer. I'm okay with not getting an answer, but it's asking the question without giving really a full answer. So,
Did it feel like this film transitioned weirdly to you? I felt that the transitions were far too fast and we didn't get to see, sometimes it was just like this happened, and we didn't get to see the consequences of something happening or the adaptation of characters to an event happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you gave it 3.5 stars, though. So you're saying all this, but you gave it 3.5 stars.
I still enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I just thought it could have done more.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted more. Like, it was a very good watch. And, like, the 3.5 stars is really driven by Nicolas Cage's performance.
Yeah.
Because this performance is just so strong.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised he hasn't shown up on any lists or anything like that this year. I know that we're starting to hit the award circuit, and I don't think he's come up at all.
No, I haven't seen him come up at all. And I think this performance is better than a lot of the other performances that we've been talking about. I think this is a better performance than what Cillian Murphy does in Oppenheimer by a lot.
Yeah, John, no matter how many times you say that, you're not going to change the inevitable. I'm just letting you know.
I'm aware, but...
I just want you to know. I know you really didn't like that movie as much as everybody else, but I'm just telling you, you're never going to
change. I'm just saying, Nick Cage's performance was much better than any performance in that movie.
Yeah. I mean, at the National Board of Review, it was Paul Giamatti who actually ended up winning Best Actor. So,
yeah. That's fine.
Maybe
Paul Giamatti was wonderful in The Holdovers. We already talked about that.
Yeah. So I think Paul Giamatti was better, but I am surprised. You know, it's almost like this is getting lost a little bit in the shuffle because it is similar. I mean, it is similar to a lot of these other movies that start to come out around this time of year, these low budget indies that are kind of weird, and it's like, which one is going to latch on? Which one's going to get the notoriety? And The Holdovers, having Alexander Payne's name attached to it, is what's carrying that one through. As opposed to this one, I'd never heard of the guy who directed it. I don't know if this is directorial debut or not. I'm going to look that up now. It's not?
No, and like A24 is not pushing this movie for Oscar noms either. Like, the company's not doing it. They have their entire... focuses on Past Lives right now instead. So it's kind of, it feels like a movie that is just kind of going to get lost in the shuffle of everything that is the end of 2023.
Yeah, I'm glad we ended up watching it. I am. But yeah, I feel like this isn't going to be showing up on people's top lists. It's going to be one of those movies that people in 5 years are going to not even remember came out. But I do feel like there's a lot of good in this movie. And I feel like there's a lot that we're going to see, moving forward, just like in with other indie movies. This to me felt like an old school indie movie. It felt like an early 2000s indie movie. And I haven't gotten that feel from a lot of indie movies recently. I've talked a lot about how it seems like a lot of them are like, look, we look good. We look good. It doesn't matter how it sounds.
Yeah.
So when I look at, you know, this movie and what it, you know, what it's doing with the characters, even the actors and actresses, Nicolas Cage, Julianne Nicholson, Michael Cera, Dylan Baker, when you're getting those types of actors, and then you tell this type of story, I do feel like there is a market for this movie. You're right. A24 is pushing Past Lives, especially since it's, you know, shown up on every list and everything like that. But maybe this is the type of movie where even if it's mildly successful, people start to say, maybe we should start making these types of movies again that are thoughtful with a big name actor, that are kind of quirky. We've had a serious shortage of those types of movies in recent years.
Yeah, we have. I think we're finally at a point where we can start experimenting with that again, though.
I hope so. I really do. Because you know, these are the types of movies that I generally go for. And I think that's also why when I give it 3 stars and then I end up talking more negatively about it, it's because this is the type of movie that really is my cup of tea, right? Like, this is the type of movie I want to watch. And so when I start to pick it apart, I start to say, this would have been better. This would have been better. This, you know, I know what about it could have been better. But I'm also appreciative that a movie like this was made. And I hope we see more in the future. It's made $4.6 million worldwide. Let me see if I can find a budget for it.
That's like got to be like what, Nicolas Cage's salary?
I know. Well, let me see. What is the budget for?
But this should be the type of, I would expect more of these movies.
$10 million budget.
I would expect more movies like this just coming out of like the strikes too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, These are the type of movies that studios are going to want, because you can get just like that one big name actor, get everyone else as like these lower name and like these lesser name people, and you can make a movie like this for $10 million, and one of them will hit eventually, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, there's no risk to this movie. I mean, this movie making $4 million worldwide on a $10 million budget, there's not that much P&A for a movie like this. You're not doing it, you know, this isn't a trailer on TV and things like that. So you're talking, even if this movie doesn't make another dollar, it loses $6 million, $7 million for A24, a studio that, what was its big, what was the biggest A24 movie this year? Like in terms of box office?
Well, I'm not sure.
Let me see if I can find that quickly. Talk to Me made $48
million. Sure. Yep.
You know, so Talk to Me. Talk to Me makes $48 million, and the budget for Talk to Me was $4.5 million. Great. Awesome.
Yeah.
That made $40 million. That makes up for Dream Scenario being a bit of a bust. But the more movies you put out like this, the more likely you are to have one of them hit, because people are going to get used to seeing them again. It's why Spike Jones and Charlie Kaufman and Michelle Gondry and stuff were killing it in the early 2000s. Wes Anderson, that's why he came to fame, because people got used to that style and started to crave it. And, you know, I'm not saying anybody's ever going to crave a comedy horror movie the way Dream Scenario is done, but it's still worth taking that risk, because you just never know, and you're not really taking a risk. I mean, look at a movie like The Marvels and the budget that The Marvels had and what its box office was. That's a risk. This isn't really a risk, especially when you've already had your big success of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And this is also like what we love about A24 too, right? Is that they're willing to put movies like this out. This is how A24 made the name for themselves. Like, yes, people credit the horror movies, which definitely pay for A24. Mm-hmm. But like, the reason people love A24 is because we get these type of movies from them.
Yeah. You have anything else you want to talk about with Dream Scenario? Because I'm going to jump to Infinity War. If not,
let's make the jump.
All right, we're going to take the jump. We're going to jump to Infinity War, Avengers: Infinity War. Well, first, I do want to say I had Dream Scenario at my number 10 for the year. Did you end up ranking it?
Ooh, I did. Let me just pull that up quickly.
Yeah, that's where it is at this moment. Obviously, it could drop. It won't rise, but it could drop. And right now, I have it at 10.
I have it at 9.
Okay. So we're kind of in agreement there. All right. Infinity War. I have so many reasons why I gave this 2 stars.
Yep.
But sure I'm going to start with a positive. The snap lives up to the hype. The snap is one of the most talked about things in film ever. Like literally ever. Yep. That was because of, you think about how much money these movies make. You think about how much a part of the culture they were. That Thanos snap is iconic, and it lives up to that hype. I honestly was a little mind blown how well executed the snap is in this movie. Mm-hmm. I really was. I was very into it. It left me saying, I'm curious what's going to happen next, which I have not felt leaving a single Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, because a lot of these movies I leave and then the next one starts and I go, wait, is this actually related at all to how the last one ended? Such as this one, where they're starting with the Asgardian ship crashed and Thanos already has Thor and Loki and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, should I remember more of what's going on with this? What's happening? What happened with the Accords and stuff again? You know, you forget it until they mention it.
Right.
And we're watching these week by week where other people are watching these year by year. But anyway, the snap is really well done. And and as somebody who doesn't know what happens next, I actually am left saying, I want to know. And I don't want to be spoiled on it. That's a weird feeling I'm having right now. And that's the end of the positive. Fascinating,
because you've never said that anything that positive about a Marvel movie. Yeah. When I watched The Snap this time around, I couldn't help but think, can you imagine how impactful this would have been if everyone didn't know another movie was coming out after it?
Yeah.
And like, I think this is what Disney's kind of like done to themselves now with the MCU and like announcing these movies, these projects years and years in advance. If we never know what the last Marvel movie is, these movies get so much better.
Well, and the other thing that I feel like it was missing out here is the fact that the movies that are being announced too are like Ant-Man and the Wasp. I could give a shit what's going to happen in Ant-Man and the Wasp. I understand that at the end of this movie, they end up showing Captain Marvel. So I get that that one has to come before Endgame. But why is Ant-Man and the Wasp thrown in the middle here?
That will make sense. I promise that will make sense.
Okay. Because it's hard for me to get excited for Ant-Man and the Wasp when I want to know what's going to end up happening to all of these characters. So again, I think, okay, so here is my problem with this movie. Yeah. And this is all number one, in 10 years, when all of the people my age, a little bit younger, like 2018, so you figure anybody born in 2003 or earlier, and I'm going to talk like 90 to 2003, because that's my age range, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
When this movie came out, if you were born in 90, you were 28 years old. Maybe you had your first kid, maybe you didn't, maybe you were close to getting married, whatever. So anywhere from that range, in 10 years, when you go to show this to your kid, they're going to say, man, Thanos looks like shit. He does not look good. And I don't care what anybody tells me. Big purple man walking around and having shiny CGI on him is not going to age well at all. I already think it doesn't age well. And I think that actually harms. I understand that he looks like this in the comics. I get it. We looked it up. I get it. But I think it actually harms the seriousness of this movie, because you feel like you're watching a cartoon villain. You don't feel like you're watching an imposing figure. I can't get over the fact that this is purple man who's muscular. Doesn't matter. When what's his name says that it looks like he has a ball sack for a chin, that's funny. But also, how am I supposed to be really intimidated by your villain when he looks like a ball sack? It doesn't do it for me. So I am... That is number one. Number two, this movie felt like a season of television rushed into 2.5 hours, giving you moments of every single character in this universe, just jumping around, boom, 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 boom. There's no through line to this movie. Thanos is the main character of this movie. I don't think that was necessarily their intention, because it's
no, that was their intention.
But it's Avengers Infinity War.
It is, but Thanos is the protagonist of this film.
Well, in that case, good job, but also spend more time with him. Because his story is the only one that matters.
Yes. It is. But you're worried, this is the issue with like a cinematic universe. And like this is the height of the MCU. I'll say it. Like, this is when it was at its most popular.
Yeah.
This is when people were like really raving about it. But this is also the start of the downfall of the MCU. Uh-huh. Right? Like, that's what happens when you hit a high, you eventually go down. And this is it. And a lot of it comes from the fact that this movie is so disjointed. And the MCU's grown too large that when you have an Avengers movie, you now have to talk about like 20 different characters and like tell us where they are and stuff. And there are characters missing from this movie that we should be invested in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just counted it on Letterboxd. If you go to the Avengers Infinity War page, there are 21 characters standing there, like holding a weapon, looking at the screen. 21.
Wow. 21.
That's a lot. And like, so when big moments like Gamora dying happen, I was like, okay. I don't remember Gamora since Guardians 2, and you haven't given her much of a story in this movie. It's so different. What'd you say?
I said they didn't give her much of a story in that movie.
They don't. She's very much a side character, so I don't get emotional when that happens. But when I look at this movie to me, you said it's the height, right? It's when it's at its most popular. And to me, this was the most fan servicey of all of the Marvel movies that we have watched thus far. It felt like pure fan service. You have every character. They all get their one moment to highlight. You get to watch different characters interact with each other. But if you're not already a fan of these movies, if you're not a fan of this universe, if you don't know these characters inside and out, like so many people did by this point, you are left in the dark on a lot, because Rocket and Thor going on an adventure together means nothing to me. You know, like a lot of these side quests that make up the, what are there, 25 different side quests in this movie? It means nothing to me. So it's really hard for me to get invested because I felt like, okay, that was probably really cool to the guy who read every Iron Man comic. That was really cool for the guy who read all the Spider-Man comics, watched the TV shows, seen all the movies, been craving this their whole life. But in terms of anybody who's not already built in as a fan, it was just a lot of nonsense. It's just a lot of, here's a character doing something that you think is cool. And what bothered me about this movie is every scene was, it would go talking scene, action scene, talking scene, action scene, talking scene, action scene. But there was no true buildup to the action scene. And they all started to just feel redundant.
I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head about like why, like what I was saying is like this movie's so hard to properly assess because as a movie, as a standalone movie, it's terrible. It's horrible as a standalone movie because there's so much, like you said, there's so much information you need to know in order to actually understand what's happening in this movie. And then again, like when you get the CGI, there's so much CGI in this movie. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. It's kind of just like
what we ever made, right?
I think so.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Keep going.
It was either this or Endgame, I'm pretty sure. But there's so much CGI. There's so many characters. Like, there's so many things to follow that if you just throw this on, the average person is going to be like, this movie sucks. It's those entrenched. But, like, when you look at it as an MCU film, it's enjoyable. Like, I gave this movie 3 stars. Is that higher than it deserves? Absolutely. Is that kind of because, like, I was basing it based on like where it falls in my MCU rankings. Yes, because I do enjoy this one a bit because I kind of, but I'm also the type of person who enjoys those little Easter eggs, who enjoys those little nuggets. And this is, it's so, but there's so much going on. There's so much going on. And I felt like the action scenes were more warranted in this movie than they have been in a lot of previous MCU movies, but they are every second scene.
Yeah. Actually, this was the 9th most expensive movie. This is actually behind Age of Ultron and Endgame, and Force Awakens is still the most expensive to date. But yeah, that was my problem is when you'd get into these fights, this is what I meant by fan service. When you'd get into these fights, I didn't feel like I understood really what people were pulling for, you know, like what was I supposed to be caring about? Because we finally got one scene with Vision and Wanda, and then immediately there's a fight. And we finally got one scene with Black Panther, and then immediately there's a fight. We finally get one. It was just, that was it the whole time. And I really thought that in terms of side characters, this movie did a terrible job with the ones that killed off. How do you kill off Idris Elba's character the way they did at the beginning of this movie? How is that supposed to pack any emotional punch? He literally just is laying there, and then he gets stabbed.
Yeah.
I almost felt like we turned on the movie and it skipped 45 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, arguably, even like killing Loki at the beginning of this movie makes no sense. You're taking one of the most popular characters in the entire and just decide, oh, let's kill him off right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another character that, like, why is this character gone? I want to touch on the beginning because you mentioned the beginning and, like, where it was going in. That's where, again, like the release order of these movies makes no sense because this immediately follows the post-credit scene from Thor Ragnarok. Right? Like that post-credit scene is literally leads into this scene. Why was there a movie in between these two movies?
That's what I'm saying. That's where
it was Black Panther, which had no relevance to anything that happened.
Black Panther should have come before Thor Ragnarok and then Thor Ragnarok and then this one, because I understand you have to introduce Black Panther because it's part of the movie. You know, Black Panther is a, they fight in Wakanda in this movie.
Yep.
But do Black Panther before Thor Ragnarok, because I agree with you. What is the point? And again, that's where I look, it is impressive what the Marvel Cinematic Universe is able to do in terms of storytelling, even if the storytelling isn't impressive. It's impressive that it's able to take all these characters, all these well-known characters, and create and fashion this massive world. I mean, it is impressive. However, the order is half-assed. And a lot of it is just, it's thrown together to be thrown together. And that's where, when I watch the first scene of this movie, I say, did I miss something? But I know I didn't miss anything because I just watched these movies. But because there's a movie in between Thor Ragnarok and this, I say, well, why was Black Panther so important to split that story up? This should be like Fellowship of the Ring ends and then Two Towers begins and you find out Gandalf's alive. Like, that's massive. That's a huge moment. That's what should be happening in these movies. But instead, they're putting in filler nonsense, whatever. And I'm going to be honest with you, at this point, I don't even know why the hell I watch the end scenes because I can't remember what the hell happened to him anyway. I might as well just turn it off as soon as the credits hit because I feel like every time I get to one of those scenes after the credits, I barely even remember what happens and I don't even know how it relates to anything because half the time it doesn't relate for seven movies.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen that several times at this point.
Yeah.
This movie's so weird. So this came out when I was living in the middle of nowhere. Right. So the first time I watched this movie, I found a copy of it in the middle of nowhere.
Love that.
Yeah. I found a copy of it. And let's just say it wasn't a firsthand copy of it.
Nice.
But I felt like because of the hype of it all, I was like, okay, I have to watch this before it gets completely spoiled for me. And I have no way. No way. And like, little did I know, there was no way I was getting out of this movie unspoiled if I had waited any longer. So there's hype. There's that hype about it. But like, the beginning of this movie feels so weird because you're like thrown into this action scene, and it doesn't even really establish Thanos as the imposing villain here. And like, that's clearly the goal they're going for. But like, it's just not delivered.
And it introduces terrible side villains. Floaty Man is the worst villain I've ever seen in a movie. And I was so happy when he died. He is unbelievably cringy to watch. And I think that's another thing. That character is going to be so dated. I think about, like, if I were to show this movie to somebody who had never seen Avengers somehow, I was to be like, this is a great action movie. You got to watch it. As soon as they saw that, they'd be like, what am I looking at? I don't understand what I'm even looking at because it's just nonsense. And the side characters are so terribly, the side villains are so terribly established as like the children and what their motivations are and what they want to do that you end up leaving it going, what am I doing? I don't understand. Did you die?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's just like suffers from. I don't. Am I here now?
Yeah, you are. I think you're on a 2 second delay for me. But
did I die? Oh, okay. I think like there's just so many characters, and they introduced all these characters, and again, like you said, there's like this fan service aspect to it. We've already been introduced to two children of Thanos previously. Like they're. I've critiqued the MCU for this, for not having foresight. And again, this feels like a lack of foresight to properly introduce these characters beforehand, rather than introducing a slew of them when you already have more characters than you've ever had in a movie.
Yeah, and Thanos is big on that with me, where I feel like by the time I'm seeing Thanos here, there has been so little Thanos in this franchise that I'm not as... whoa, it's Thanos, and finally he's doing stuff. There's been barely any buildup to him just destroying the Asgardian fleet and doing whatever. Like, there's been zero buildup to that. I know he's been in some scenes, but there's been no buildup to this actually having a lot of meaning. They do a good job with Thanos throughout this movie, but they're pretty much starting from scratch with him, but they don't start from scratch him at the beginning. And they needed to, because it really, I felt like I was flung in. I was thrown into the deep end. And there were supposed to be big moments happening there. I mean, if that was really the end of Loki in this franchise, holy crap, that is the worst ending I've ever seen for a good villain. It's horrific. And
is that a good villain? We critiqued him pretty hard in the last his last few appearances.
Yeah, okay. But that's the writing more than anything. Loki himself is an interesting character. Loki himself matters to the MCU, and it's fun, you know, with But his motivations are lazy in half of the movies. That's not Loki. That's the writing of Loki. Loki is a good villain. But if this is really the end of him, it's like, really? That's how you killed? You killed him in the same scene you killed Heimdall? And you killed both of them 5 minutes into a movie? Just what, for the shock of it? I don't understand.
Yeah.
So I was really surprised when I saw that this movie had a 3.9 on Letterboxd. I think that's the highest out of any of the MCU movies. And I was really surprised. And then when the snap happened, I got it. Because if that's what you're leaving that movie with, you're going to be leaving going, oh, that's a really, that was good. We're going to be talking about this. And you convince yourself that everything that preceded it is better. But without knowing that the snap was coming, I was sitting there going, what the hell am I watching? Because especially in that first 10 minutes, they just dropped us off and said, have a good day. And I don't know why they did it that way. They didn't have to.
I think it would have benefited for us actually seeing the carnage. Like, show us Thanos being intimidating rather than just, like, standing over and, like, directing other people to be intimidating.
Yeah.
Like, we have that, like, the line of, like, let him have his fun. Right? He didn't have fun. We saw him, like, beat the Hulk, but we didn't see him really beat the Hulk. Like, there should have been much... Thanos should have been more imposing. Because they do, like you said, they do a good job at flushing him out throughout this movie, where, like, we understand his motivation, we understand his actions, we understand his connection to Gamora, even though that's kind of, like, not flushed out as much as it should be, but, like, we get it. We get where this character is coming from. We understand his ideology, and we understand how he's going to achieve his goals. But we're never really at a point where it's like, yes, this guy's actually as intimidating as people make him out to be. Because he already has the power stone by the time we meet him in the movie.
Yeah.
Which means, just so, like, Phil, you probably didn't even pick this up, he decimated Xandar from the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Like, decimated it in order to get this stone.
Didn't know it.
Yeah. It's a passing line of dialogue in this movie.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and it's like, it's these little things where it's like, there should be more imposing from him. But I do really like the focus on him as a character, because I think it's something that isn't done enough in films, especially a film like this, which comes off as a middle movie in a trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I'm curious to see how they eventually do kill Thanos. And I, you know, this movie does an over the top job of, explaining that Thanos is essentially untouchable, because now he can change time and he can change people. Every time they try to stab him, it turns into bubbles and things like that. But I am curious how they will kill him, or if they do, or whatever happens. I'm invested, you know, I am, but really that's just more because I've never seen something like that. More than anything else. And I feel like the characterization of Thanos gets better and better as the movie goes on. But right at the beginning, it's just not very good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, he's there. And he's the same body with a face that we saw at in the post-credit scenes for the first Avengers movie.
Jason Obermeyer said, so Phil, which MCU movie is Redemption Island, which is Token Sheen's Kagan or Hero's Villain? So that's obviously the Survivor reference there. And I will say this, I don't know which is my Token Sheen's Kagan or Hero's Villains at this point, but I can tell you confidently that Age of Ultron is Redemption Island, and it's going to take a season 41 type effort for something to dethrone that from the bottom of my rankings right now, because for as much as I'm complaining about Infinity War, there's so much more impressive about this movie, and it is a vast improvement over the first two Avengers movies, which were just god-awful in my estimation.
Yeah, I think it's still, like, the ensemble's handled better in this than... It feels like we still have these distinct characters. Yes, there's some issue with, like, there being too many for us to fully get moments, but we're still getting things like... Drax is still the hilarious part of this entire
movie. Yeah.
Like, his entire, like, gushing over Thor being incredibly handsome, so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the part, too, where he was saying he was invisible. Even though it was stupid, yes. I do like Drax's little side missions with himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drax is just the most interesting Guardian of the Galaxy. That's all.
Yeah. And it you know, they did a good job. Dave Bautista just does a great job of playing that role. Yes. He really does. He plays that to perfection. He really does. Because that could totally not come to life and fall flat. And it could come off super corny, like a lot of stuff in this universe does. But he just nails it. He really does. So, what else? What else about Infinity War? I feel like I've said my piece, so I don't know what else you got.
I don't know if there's much else to say. Like, again, like, I enjoy this. I think I just enjoy it because I do like it as a culmination. I think I give this movie a lot of credit for where it's, again, for like, I think it gets a lot of credit just for like being in the MCU, being the pinnacle of the MCU. It's enjoyable. The villain's actually interesting. Maybe I just really like movies where villains win. Like, maybe that just gets me. And like, the snap is such, it is such a huge moment that it just like, it does leave you going, wow, I can't believe they actually did this. Even though, you know, there's 8 billion movies coming out after this.
Yeah, I think that's what bothers me the most is he might have won here, but I know ultimately he's going to lose. Like, he's got to lose, you know, because there's 75 more movies. So even if he doesn't really lose, he loses. You know, everybody, they're still going to be able to make, I mean, what, in phase 4, they're still able to make another Doctor Strange movie. So they're making more Spider-Man movies. So clearly these characters are doing something. They're still around in some capacity. So he doesn't really win. So yeah, that's just what bothers me really more than anything. Yep. So, you know, and Jason Obermeyer said, how'd you feel about the CGI this time? I didn't like it. I think it made some, Thanos can't be as imposing as all time villains just because of his look. He just can't be. He's just not.
I think we're just going to be looking at this like two and a half decades of cinema and be like, I can't believe we thought this was a good idea when it comes to CGI in the future.
That being said, I will say Josh Brolin's voice acting was phenomenal.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
who's good? It really is. And I think again, this movie really punctuates how great of a casting Tom Holland was.
Yeah, he was very good. His Mr. Stark, I don't know what's happening or whatever. That was Tom Holland's the best actor in these movies. I don't really care what anybody says. I think he's better than
Downey. No, you're probably right.
Yeah.
Although I want to point out, in the scene where they kill Ebony Maw, who's the floating guy that you don't like.
No, he's Floaty Man.
He's Floaty Man, sorry. Yeah. Where they kill Floaty Man. Remember that Peter says, have you ever seen this really old movie called Aliens?
Yeah.
The plan they used was from Alien, not Aliens.
I honestly didn't even really pay attention to what the plan they were talking about was. What was the plan?
They just jettisoned him into space.
Yeah, that's from the first one, not the second.
That's from the first one. That's not the second one.
Because in the second one, she blows up the queen.
Yeah.
And then they jettison into space.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, Peter. Your old movie cred is just completely shot with this one.
It's falling apart at the seams, damn it. Falling apart at the seams. Oh, my God. Yeah, this movie was. It was what it was. I gave it 2 stars. I currently have it ranked 14th out of 19. I put it above Black Panther, though.
Oh, I also put it above Black Panther. That means it's a lot higher in my rankings. I actually have it at 7.
7. That's where I have Ant-Man.
I just enjoyed it. Like, and like, this is, I think this is the pinnacle of like, I can shut my brain off and watch this one. And I can have a good time because of that. And that's okay sometimes.
Yeah. No, and I agree. I just didn't, this to me didn't hit because I have no relation with these characters. So it was too much fan service. Yep. So I shut my brain off and then I wanted it to be over.
Yep.
All right, we'll end with this question from Jason Obermeyer. So what do you think makes for good CGI and bad CGI? To me, good CGI looks like you could actually be standing in that place or it's actually benefiting the movie. So something like Annihilation. You can tell that entire movie is CGI for the most part, but it is purposeful because of where they are. They're in this weird space where aliens are kind of like creating something. Interstellar is great CGI. Mm-hmm. That's phenomenal CGI. Probably some of the best ever made. Lord of the Rings is still great CGI, even though, you know, when they march, when the orcs and Uruk-hai march in, they march in very distinct squares. But that is still great CGI. This movie, it feels like a lot of time you can tell that they're standing in front of a green screen and they're not, they have no interaction with anything that's going on behind them or around them. Yeah. And that's what makes bad CGI to me. When everything, because you have to think, like, if you go watch an old timey movie, go watch Lawrence of Arabia, go watch Ben-Hur, go watch one of those like epic action movies, go watch Bridge on the River Kwai. Something happens on that screen, everybody reacts to it because it's really happening. In this, you'll have explosions and stuff going on in the background. Everybody just stands there. And it's kind of funny because that CGI is so blatantly CGI and these characters aren't even reacting. I was telling my wife that my favorite part of these movies is every time an explosion happens behind them, they all do the same pose. And it's been going on throughout the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. And in this one, it's really noticeable when it's Wong and Doctor Strange, the guy, whoever it is, the Hulk falls through the ceiling and they fall through and you hear the explosion and they duck. And then it cuts to the next scene and they're both like half crouched down. And I call it the Ken pose, where they're like half crouched down with like their hand over their face. And it looks like Ken and Barbie. Like, it's just, you can tell that they're barely reacting to what's actually happening to them, because what's happening to them is a director is saying, do this, you know, here's a clap, done. There's not actually anything happening on that stage. So the CGI has got to bleed together a little bit better. So that's what does it for me.
I think like the big thing with me, with good CGI is when it replaces something that you couldn't do better with practical effects.
True. I agree with that.
Like, that's just what it comes down to. Build a set. Yep. Don't have it in a small room. Like, build a set. It's much more interesting. Have a model spaceship flying through a backdrop.
Yep.
It just looks better.
Yep. Nope. I totally get that. I really do. I totally get that. All right. Next week, we are going to be doing Godzilla Minus One as our regular movie. Very excited for that one. I'd be talking about a Godzilla movie for people to listen. And we're going to be doing Ant-Man and the Wasp, because that is up next. The third movie that came out in 2018. My God, phase three is long and arduous.
Yes.
And oh my goodness. Yes. Jason Obermeyer, a good blend like Jurassic Park. That is a prime example of great CGI is Jurassic Park. But yeah, so Ant-Man and the Wasp.
We get some good CGI this week with Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be fantastic. If the CGI stinks, I'm going to be real pissed. So we'll see.
I mean, it has a $15 million budget, so I can't promise anything.
Yeah, but they do a pretty good job in those movies of like hiding Godzilla and using that budget for when it's actually important. So anyway, thank you all for listening. Three more weeks, and then John and I are going to start rolling out our Tuesday shows for patrons. That'll be coming out, well, I guess it's 2.5, 3.5 weeks, whatever. Yep. It'll be in January, will be the first episode. But John and I are going to start rolling out Patreon content for $5 patrons. So if you want to become a patron, patreon.com/survivorspecialist. Maybe you don't want to become a patron now because what the heck are you going to get in December? But go ahead and start thinking about it for January. It's going to be worth it. $60 for the year to get some coverage of, to get a movie covered every single week. $60 for the year. So keep that in mind for when you're thinking about how you want to budget out your new year. $60 for the entire year. Not too crazy. And would go a long way in really helping us out and helping us keep this going. Because if you follow the channel right now, the Survivor Specialist channel, which is going to become the specialist on January 1, a lot of content going out, a lot of time, a lot of effort from a lot of people going into this. And we really do want to make this, we want to make this a huge thing. We don't want to just make this something that where the status quo is kept. We want to make this massive. So any type of support you can give is greatly appreciated. So consider that as we get into the new year. And, you know, any extra money you give us is just John can go buy somebody a Christmas present. So thank you all for listening. Thank you all for becoming patrons or considering becoming patrons. January is going to be a great time to be a patron of the Specialist. Especially if you like movies and Survivor, oh my God, you're getting everything you could possibly want. If you just like movies, you could give a damn about Survivor. You're still going to get a lot. So thank you all so much. We will see you next week, probably Wednesday night. That's my guess. Actually, no, maybe Thursday. I don't know. John and I will figure it out. Follow us on Twitter, Movie Specialist. And that's it. We'll let you know there.